What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Sat Signal. Today, we are joined from Bish from Stormrake in Melbourne. This is a stellar company with 5,000 clients around the country. They are one of the top Bitcoin and crypto brokers in the entire country. He has built an amazing business and he's been a Bitcoiner himself since the early days. In this session, we have a wide-ranging discussion around inflation, hard money, why many governments around the world are in real trouble right now, and a very interesting story about how Bish turned a meeting in a car park at a McDonald's in Victoria, a $5,000 brown bag deal, into a $750,000 return so far. You're going to hear this incredible story, and it's an absolute pleasure having Bish on the show. You're going to love it. He's an absolute weapon in this space. He's an authority in the space. If you are interested in Bitcoin or you're interested in self-sovereignty, you're going to love this podcast. Remember, guys, the one thing that you can do for us is to subscribe to the channel. Every time I look at it, there's like 50% subscribe, 50% not. This is the number one thing that enables us to get more legends like Bish on the show. The bigger the audience, the more they want to come on and talk to us for free and educate us. So drop a subscribe if you haven't already. Drop a comment. Let us know. Enjoy the show. Good morning, everybody. What is up? Welcome to the Sat Signal on Unemployable. We are joined by somebody known in Australia as the Baron of Bitcoin, Bish from Stormrake. What is up, Bish? Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
An absolute pleasure to be here, my man. What a privilege it is to have a chat with yourself. It's funny because I get all of your Insta reels sent to me directly going like, you need to work with this guy. He's an absolute monster of Bitcoin. I'm like, well, we've got to get acquainted. So it happened, which I'm excited about.
It's funny, isn't it? The Bitcoin community really does put people together really quickly. And that's what I love about it. It's, you know, people are just so passionate about the subject. And, you know, it's nice actually to connect with an Aussie because a lot of our audience is Australians, but there's not a lot of, you know, high profile voices in the space in Australia. For those of you who don't know who Bish is, you're about to see why he is so well known in Australia as a Bitcoin advocate, why you see him and his company in the news quite a lot. But what an auspicious time, Bish, to be talking. 107 today, yes. US dollars, knocking on the doors of the all-time highs. I think it might have been an all-time high today, was it?
All-time highs close, correct. But all-time highs at 109 and a half. So we're just this close.
We're knocking on the door. All right, good stuff. I think we're going to look back in 5 years and laugh about this. We're going to go, remember how excited we were when it got over $100,000, you know?
Oh, no. I remember the first time it happened. I was outside Morrison's. It's like a steak and oyster bar on George Street in Sydney. And I was just like casually with a couple of friends and a couple of business partners. And then I just got the notification that it crossed through 100K and I was just belligerent on George Street. I was like, you, I can't believe it. This is it. Because like I remember when I first talked about it, I tried to introduce it to like friends and family when Bitcoin was around a couple of grand. And they were like, I said, this thing's going to go to 100K. Like it's finite, it's scarce, it's sovereign, it's immutable. Like there's all these crazy things about it. This is going to go to 100K. And people called me all kinds of things, charlatans, scam artists, like even from the people who were closest to me, like, dude, I'm just telling you what I'm seeing, what I actually believe in. So it was a little bit of vindication in there as well.
So you're walking down, you know, Pitt Street, like Conor McGregor, dude. Like,
absolutely.
So look, let's frame you up first, because I think it's important people understand why they need to listen to you, not from an ego point of view, but just for context. Can you just tell us a little bit about Stormrake, what you guys do, how many employees, how many clients, that kind of stuff, just to give people perspective of you know, why you are an authority in the space.
Awesome. So Stormrake got founded in 2019 by Doug Hemingway and Michael Milmeister. Initially, it was meant to be just purely a StatArb trading desk. They weren't taking on external clients. They were just running and managing their own private funds in the market. Then 2022 rolled around and they wanted to start a brokerage arm of the business because a lot of their friends and family were saying, trade for us, invest for us. So they spun up the brokerage arm of Stormrake, and that's what we've been come to know and love in the Australian public as the service we provide. They brought me on because my entire career has been FX and crypto brokerage. It's all I've known from when I was 18 to now I'm 30, all I've done for the last 12 years is just, you know, talk to people about foreign exchange rates and cryptocurrencies. And so when they brought me in, I bought into the business at the end of the 2022, just after the FTX collapse. Mm-hmm. And we were able to build an amazing business, which has got now about 5,000 clients, predominantly in Australia and the United States. And we also have about 15 staff who help us do what we do. We've got our own portal, our own platform, all built in-house. One thing that I have particularly enjoyed about delivering the StormRake service is we don't rely on third-party tools. Now, we do source liquidity from different exchanges, different counterparties. That's part and parcel of being a crypto brokerage and how we can get good prices for our clients. But all of the technology has been built in-house. The custody solution has been built in-house. The withdrawal tool has been built in-house because we've seen a lot of issues in the brokerage and exchange space when they rely on third-party solutions. So we've built everything here, all Australian technology, homegrown. I mean, look, the Australian environment for entrepreneurs is quite hostile, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, it's a beautiful country and the Australian people deserve a white glove concierge service to get into the crypto brokerage market. So that's really what we've been able to do. We were at 100 clients in 2023, now over 5,000, and we have two main jurisdictions we service, which is AUNZ, Australia, New Zealand, our own backyard, and then the United States as well.
Incredible. I want to dive in a little bit more into exactly what StormRake does so people understand what it is. But you said something there in passing. You're an international guy. You do business overseas and in Australia. What did you mean when you said it's a bit of a hostile environment? Do you mean for crypto or for business? Or like, what's your take on that? I'd just be curious.
It's a bit of both. Like the way I look at it is, you know, we just hired our fifth developer and now we've hired so many people, Australians, local guys and gals. We don't offshore any of our staff. And they all come into our office here in Queens Road. And we now pay payroll tax, right? Nice. We've hired so many people that I have to pay a premium on my payroll because I've been employing people. That's on top of BAS. That's on top of the Superfund contributions that have gone up to 11% now. So it's just very aggressive taxation. And look, I'm not here to kind of gripe or whinge or anything. I mean, we do what we need to do to build our business. It is what it is. And then you add on top of that the banks that are so hostile towards crypto businesses and digital asset businesses. And I believe that stems from it's like the candlestick maker being upset with the light bulb manufacturer. Right. And it's like they of course they're going to be upset because we're going to put them out of business, right? And they're not adapting quickly enough. I mean, you see places in the United States, they're adapting pretty quickly, but the Australian banks, they're the four largest banks, NAB, CBA, ANZ and Westpac, are some of the most profitable banks in the world off a population of 25 million people. And that's because they've got a stranglehold on interest rates within this country. So of course they would be threatened by Bitcoin, which is an alternative and better form of money that makes them as a whole, as an intermediary, redundant. So that's why it's been quite difficult, both from the government's perspective that there's no regulatory clarity, similar to what the United States provides. There's a lot of clarity there. And then they aggressively tax the living daylights out of you. And then you add on top of that the hostility from the banks. It's like modern day warfare. But to be fair, I wouldn't have it any other way because there are 25 million Australians who deserve access to better money and a more sovereign standpoint that they can build their wealth upon. And that's Bitcoin, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, we've seen this court ruling this week in Victoria coming out of a magistrate's court. A magistrate judge there has ruled that they believe that Bitcoin is a currency. Obviously, you're watching that with a lot of interest, but you've really just got to follow the money. Like, you know, one of the most outspoken bankers in the world and the most powerful banker in the world, Jamie Dimon, obviously this week has bent the knee, finally, to Bitcoin. And he came out saying Bitcoin is a scam, it's for drug dealers, it's for sex trafficking, it's for all these terrible things. And this week, after all of that, he's come out and said, we're now allowing our customers to buy Bitcoin, but we're not going to custody it. And of course, that's going to change in time as well. The bottom line is Bitcoin will, in my opinion, just be a no choice for the banks. It'll be too valuable, too much business to be had. And one thing that was interesting out of that court ruling, or the article in the Financial Review that came out in Australia, they said that there's 1.9 million crypto owners in Australia or wallets in Australia, which is quite interesting. I mean, that's getting to the point of political influence.
Yep, 100%. So, I mean, to unpack even what Jamie Dimon had to do to bend the knee, the bank that he represents, JP Morgan, the bank in which it is named after, was a famous private banker named JP Morgan. Mm-hmm. And he was, one of his famous quotes is, "Gold is money and everything else is credit," right? That's one of the most famous quotes attributed to him. And now this is back in the early 20th century, in the 1900s, where at that stage, Bitcoin hadn't been invented yet. Not even the concept of the internet had even been heard about. So hard, scarce money has always been the cornerstone of traditional banking. And but what was really interesting is when gold was confiscated in the United States and the common man and woman was banned from owning and trading it, JP Morgan also removed gold facilities. All the while, their founder and the bank in which it is named after is famous for saying gold is money and everything else is credit. So the fact that Jamie Dimon is now saying, after years of disparaging Bitcoin as an asset class, as a money, as a currency, the fact that he's bent the knee makes perfect sense, because it's not the first time that the bank that is JP Morgan has had to, you know, literally accept hard money into its trading facilities or into its custody services again. And that's why I kind of see it as a no-brainer. In terms of what happened with the Magistrates Court, very interesting story, very interesting development. The designation that it's not a piece of property, but that it's a money or a currency. Like, we've got the Bitcoin white paper over my head right now, which is a peer-to-peer electronic cash, right? And so I'd love to kind of see it being used as money, right? So you don't want to be taxed on something in which you're disposing of it to spend it for goods and services, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. So the designation as a property asset doesn't actually make sense. And that's what the ATO has been taxing for, as it has been taxing it for the last, I don't know, 10 years. And so this change is quite welcome, but yet to be developed or currently developing.
Yeah, it'll have to go to the High Court. But if it's upheld in the High Court, I mean, it would be an unbelievable development in Australia, and especially in the climate that we're in right now, where we're in such a high taxing government and a high taxing climate. I mean, you're in Victoria, you're in the highest of highest taxes, where they're right, literally protesting in the streets right now, but with the fireys and trying to charge the fireys for taxes on their own volunteer. It's just crazy. So for Australia to potentially be a tax-free Bitcoin destination would bring so much innovation to the country if that actually happened. I mean, you and I are catching up in Vegas in next week, and there's, you know, I think of a lot of Aussies don't realize how big the industry is. You know, it's going to be 30,000 people there in Las Vegas with, you know, unbelievable lineup of speakers, people from all corners of the world. Just two nights ago, I was in a little Bitcoin meetup here in Limassol with people learning about Bitcoin for the first time. And it's just that grassroots movement. It's just a awesome thing. So very interesting times we're living in, and I can't imagine what you're dealing with. I think that payroll tax you talked about is the most ridiculous tax of all the taxes in Australia. It's basically just penalizing small businesses for growing, which is stupid. But the environment that you're working in, like the number of people that contact me that go, "What bank should I use to transfer money into a crypto exchange to buy Bitcoin?" And that, like, I see it all the time where, like, Hom Bank is almost making it impossible. They put you on the phone for 15, 20 minutes and ask you these questions. Are you under duress? Is somebody just there with you? Are you on speakerphone? Do you understand the scams? So they're so determined to protect what's made them so much money, which is the industry they're in. Why would they advocate for something that's going to disrupt what's made them into billionaires, you know?
It is a bang on the point. And this is why we've built the Stormrake brokerage business, in order to make transferring into our service as easy and seamless as possible. Like, we have our own Big Four bank account, and we help our clients transition from fiat currencies into Bitcoin seamlessly through a simple phone call or email. That's like how the service is. But I do really sympathize with a lot of my competitors, whether they be brokerages or exchanges, because they also are aligned on the mission. There's actually been a number of, I'm sure you remember back in the day, there was local Bitcoins where people could trade Bitcoin peer-to-peer. They've really come after these people in a big way. So if you're not a bigger institution, you're not a bigger brokerage desk, it becomes harder to operate. So we've absorbed a lot of those inflows, but getting funds into an exchange, even as an institution ourselves, it's quite difficult at times, but we've got a lot of private markets. We're able to secure Bitcoin at massive discounts off the actual market price in order to fill our clients' orders. And that's done in WhatsApp and Telegram group chats with like other OTC desks. So we've built a product that allows the client or the end user seamlessly deposit into our service and then be able to make a purchase through a phone call or email. I think that's the crux.
So to be clear, Bish, what you're saying is Aussies can transfer their money into your bank account, which is just an Australian business separate to an exchange, right? So you don't get the third degree. And then from there, they can buy the Bitcoin through Stormrank.
Correct, sir. Correct. That's exactly how we built it. Because, and the great thing about the way we operate is our business name is no different from our bank account name. So our Stormrank Pty Ltd is the not named bank account that you're sending funds to. We're an AUSTRAC registered firm as a digital currency exchange. So we abide by all the standard rules and regulations to kind of tick all the boxes along the way, which makes the bankers a little bit more happy. And that's why we've, you know, just this morning we received $500,000 from one of our clients who's like, Bish, are we at the breakout level? I'm like, this is the definition of the breakout level. And so they bought they bought another $500,000 of Bitcoin. So, and that was an easy domestic transfer. So I can appreciate the challenges people are facing with the banks. Even with us, out of every 10 transfers we receive, one or two will receive the third degree, a lot of difficulty. But the difference between when you go to transfer to us or to an exchange, when you do get a difficult time from the banks, you've got us to help you out. So what that means is usually I consult with my clients. I say, look, first of all, don't be belligerent and don't be aggressive to the frontline staff. They're literally just reading script and they have no idea what's going on. They're not making the decision. It's the bank's risk algorithm. That's what they're doing, right? It's just all automated. And the frontline staff that you're speaking to on the phone, they're not the decision makers. So just be polite, but firm, and never misrepresent what it is that you're doing. Because oftentimes they make you feel so guilty for transacting and wanting to invest into Bitcoin that you feel like there's almost like this pressure to make up a story. I'll tell you something funny, Adam. Once one of my clients was looking to send me about 250K to buy some Bitcoin because he wanted to buy about 2.5 BTC. This was when Bitcoin was around 100,000 Aussie. We're trading at 167 now. And so he got a bit of a hard time from the bank. And the bank said, why are you making such a large transfer? And on the spot, for some reason, he says, I'm buying a pistachio farm. I think he might have been having a bag of pistachios at the time. And I'm like, why would you say that? Like, dude, like, I love everything that you do, but you don't need to like misrepresent. If you type in Stormrank, you see a Bitcoin brokerage, right? So they said, well, this is not a pistachio farm. And then they denied the transaction. So I told them to call back the bank and say, look, he was put on the spot. He is dealing with the AUSTRAC registered Bitcoin broker based in Melbourne. They share my direct contact details because I'm, you know, domiciled in Melbourne all the time. And that usually appeases the banks. But we say, be firm, but be polite to the frontline staff and never misrepresent what you're doing, because you shouldn't be treated like a criminal for wanting to make an investment into Bitcoin. But when they do give you a hard time, just be transparent, be forthright. You don't need to tell them your wallet. You don't need to tell them how you're keeping your assets safe. You don't need to go into any of that stuff, but be forthright about the fact that you're making an investment, and that will be fine most of the time.
I think there's two things here, right? Like, number one, I think to be fair to the banks, there is a lot of fraud and there is a lot of people trying to get their hands on people's Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and there's a lot of theft. So I do want to acknowledge that it's good in one way that the banks are proactive. That's the one side of the argument. The other side of the argument is, of course, we're disintermediating money, right? Banks are so used to having the power of sitting between you and your economic, honestly earned economic value, and charging fees on that value and charging fees of being in that middle. Like, I just opened a bank account where I live in Cyprus, and it was just amazing because they've been through quite a difficult economic time for the banks and stuff in the past. But the manager said, look, when you're going to send any more than $10,000 to the bank, just let us know in advance, give us a heads up, and give us a heads up when you want to take anything out. And I'm like, hang on, you want me to tell you if I'm putting money in the bank as well now? It's just like, wow.
Cyprus, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, but didn't Cyprus have a pretty serious bank bail-in recently?
They did. 2013, so, yeah.
Yeah, so that's my concern is that's where Australia is heading at the moment, that the banks are operating a fractionally reserved, rehypothecated mess, and they've traded themselves into a pickle. And so the only way they can recapitalize their banks is through bank bail-ins. And it's not uncommon. It's not like this. It doesn't happen in the Western world. It happened where you're currently residing in Cyprus. So that's why I'm so, like, yes, I can appreciate they've got a hard role to, in order to avoid people getting scammed. But that's why I'm also so eager to get people out of the banks, is because I don't think that commercial bank exposure right now is very safe. A lot of people come back to me and go, oh, what do you mean, Bish? It's federally government guaranteed up to about $250,000. I'm like, if they had to backstop $250,000 worth of each bank account, they would have to print the currency into oblivion in order to backstop that entire claim. So, you know, yes, they could do that. But if a bag of potatoes costs you $1,000, it's not going to last you very long, right? $1,000 Aussie dollars. So I always caution people that you can use the commercial banks as you have gotten used to over using them for the last few decades, but only use them to the extent that you need to, you know, pay for things and spend as you see fit, until Bitcoin becomes more ubiquitous and is the main way of you being able to transact. Until that stage, you don't need to have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of exposure in the commercial bank. I know it seems a bit extreme and maybe a bit hardline, but I think it's just only a responsible thing considering bank bail-ins are around the corner.
Yeah. I want to talk more about what Stormrake does towards the end. So listen in, guys, towards this, because there's a real reason that you should consider using Stormrake, basically be able to buy Bitcoin a lot cheaper. And then that in, because there has been very little competition in the Australian market, if you buy through many of the exchanges, the spreads, which we'll explain what a spread is later in the podcast, get out of hand, and the fees and all the craziness, especially if you're buying smaller, well, both larger and smaller amounts are affected in different ways. So we'll get to that. But it is interesting, you know, for Aussies listening to this, there's a saying in Bitcoin that they say, you know, it's on a need to know basis. So if you look at somebody like Jamie Dimon, who's a multi-billionaire running JP Morgan, his need to know about Bitcoin is pretty low, right? Microsoft's need to know when they said, no, we're not going to buy Bitcoin. Well, Microsoft's a multi-billion dollar corporation. Two nights ago, I'm sitting in a little Bitcoin meetup here in Limassol. There's probably 20, 30 people there that are learning about Bitcoin for the first time. And in this room, it was full of Lebanese, Cypriots, you know, Israelis, people from all over the world. They needed zero convincing about why Bitcoin is important. They understand because, like in Lebanon, the banks completely collapsed and the ATM stopped working and people lost all their money. Here in Greece, they had 4 years of capital controls where you couldn't take out money for 4 years out of the bank. It was there on digits, but it was not there, you know, to be used. And so I think for Australians, when they're trying to assess, you know, the use case for a lot of people around the world, it's that they have currencies that they just don't trust or are hyperinflating, you know, like they know they can't keep large amounts of money in the bank, for either the bank will fail or the price of goods, even here in Cyprus, in northern Cyprus, controlled by the Turkish, inflation's out of control up there, you know, over the border. And so you've got hundreds and hundreds of millions of people around the world that need sound money, not just want, like a lot of Aussies buy because they want it to go up in price. Like, you know, it break out, I'm going to put in $500,000 because I want to make it into $1 million. But for a lot of people, it's not about that. It's about actual store of economic value and preservation of their life force. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Bish?
100%. I mean, you hit a very sensitive topic on the head for me personally, because I come from a Lebanese family. I was born and raised here in Australia. Fortunately enough, it's a beautiful country to be brought up in. But my family left at the time when my grandmother was growing up in Lebanon. One US dollar bought you 3 Lebanese pounds. Now, one US dollar buys you 150,000 Lebanese pounds. It's absolute insanity. absolute insanity. So it's just gone through a massive amount of hyperinflation. So I understand the absolute need for it. And I've got a lot of relatives that are back home in Lebanon, in Beirut, who say, Bish, we're really struggling. I say, no problems. They open up their Bitcoin wallet, send me a receive address. I bang them over maybe a couple thousand bucks worth of Bitcoin, and there's no intermediaries. It's received. They say thank you, or in Arabic they say
Amazing.
shukran, and then that was it. And so, whereas if I was to send them the remit the same value back to Lebanon through like a Western Union or a MoneyGram, first of all, not only would there be crazy amounts of fees on my end, but then secondly, the bank, if you send them a major currency like US dollars, for example, the bank takes a 50% haircut because there's a difference between the onshore rate and the offshore rate of Lebanese pounds, which is absolute insanity. It means that I can send at one price and they receive it at another price. And it's just insanity, guys. It's just insanity.
Mate,
So,
I see it here, Bish, every Friday, I think it is, down here on the beachfront. There's a MoneyGram or a Western Union, and the Indian and Filipino workers in the city come down with their pay packets. They're sending the money back home, and I'm just watching them line up to get ripped off. And it's just like the amount of fees they get charged to do it, but they just don't understand, don't have an option of what you just talked about, or they have an option, they just don't understand. That's why education is so important. God, it's interesting. At this meetup, Bish, I was talking to this dude, and I think people at home will find this fascinating. He was telling me that they were so there's a platform called BISQ. You've probably heard of this. I've never heard of this. BISQ, right? And I said, how does this work? And he was explaining that they put money in envelopes and they film themselves putting real cash. And there's a protocol, there's a way to film the video. And then, so a Bitcoin owner puts the Bitcoin in escrow with BISQ. And they put cash in an envelope and have to film themselves putting the cash in the envelope and then putting it into the mail. And then that serves as proof of delivery. And then the person with the Bitcoin, when it arrives in the mail, goes to the platform and it's released out of escrow. And then if there's ever a dispute, the platform looks at the video and looks for fraud, but there's actually very little fraud. And people are actually buying completely anonymously using cash on this platform, BISQ. And I'm like, oh my God, like what kind of world is this? But this is the real world, right? This is the world where people desperately need hard, honest currency. It just blew my mind when I, and this guy had done it like a bunch of times, like Bitcoin through the post.
It's insane because like I remember how underdeveloped the Bitcoin market was in Australia when I was first buying. I remember I was in Melbourne. I went to the McDonald's car park in Blackburn South, just off Middleborough Road, and I sat there because I was meant to meet up with some guy to give him $5,000 to buy some Bitcoin. And then some dude knocked on my window and he's like, "You here for the Bitcoin?" And I looked at the cash envelope that I had next to me. I'm like, "Yeah, you here for the cash?" And he exchanged for me the paper wallet. I gave him the $5,000 of Bitcoin, and then I drove home. And no joke, I was in my beat up Honda Civic, and I was like, What have I done? I don't know if this is, am I just driving home with a piece of paper for 5 grand? But then I went home, set it up, was able to get it onto a new private wallet. It was just awesome. It was just such an interesting experience. But now people are so used to online platforms that you know what? I was like, for me, that experience really shaped my view of Bitcoin as a Bitcoiner. I'm like, I like it when it's like direct, peer to peer. Somebody that I can deal with myself personally. And so, although I didn't know this guy from Bar of Soap, just an internet random, being able to have that transaction in person gave me a lot more peace of mind. And now we're able to deliver that same experience, but at scale, just over the phone and by email.
Yeah, it's beautiful, you know. I was shocked that this BISQ thing wasn't just, you know, just full of scammers, but there's this thing about Bitcoin is that understand this inherent human right to transfer value without an intermediary. And there are Bitcoiners that are selling down some of their Bitcoin for cash coming in an envelope. I mean, it's just crazy. But interestingly, at this event, this guy, this Greek guy, got up and spoke. He lives in Athens. He's based in Cyprus for tax reasons, but lives in Athens and goes back and forward. And he got up and he said to the beginners, and this is a really simple thing. He said to the other guy that was presenting, he wasn't a great speaker, but he was so passionate about Bitcoin. He'd been at it for 10 years. He's done very well. pulls out 5 euro out of his wallet and he walks over and he says, most people are used to people seeing this. So I walk around and say, here's that $5. And the guy grabs it and puts it in his wallet. So that's a direct peer-to-peer transaction using fiat. Mm-hmm. But if we slow that down and actually look at what occurred, it was direct. You think there's no intermediary, but what have we actually exchanged? We've exchanged this debt obligation, this printed piece of paper. And the question is, what's going on with that piece of paper? How many more of these pieces of paper in circulation printed? What's the real value of that thing now that the government's just pumped in a few more million of those today, right? That's whereas right. Bitcoin earlier, and he says, now let's show you what that looks like on Bitcoin. And then they opened up two wallets using the Lightning Network, boom, boom, and the value's transferred. The difference is there'll never be any more of what we just transferred. And the audience, you could just see it click for a lot of people. So it's very interesting.
It is. I mean, look, there's a huge, I mean, Greece, I mean, that gentleman is an absolute scholar and a gentleman because he experienced it in Greece. And that's why they went through a sovereign debt crisis. I believe, and I'm happy to kind of spar this out with you as well, Adam, you know, that there is large sovereign debt crises coming to the Western world, whether that be in the United States, United Kingdom, Germany, Australia, Canada. Because what's happened over the last decade, two decades, three decades, is the governments have been incredibly fiscally irresponsible. They've been racking up massive deficits. And now you've got, you know, bond yields across the planet, you know, going the 20 years and the 30 years are going north of 5%, for example, which all that means in layman's terms is the government's cost of borrow is going through the roof. People thought that the RBA rate cut yesterday was in relation to wanting to ease the pressure for mums and dads at home or over-levered property investors. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got the fact that the Australian 20-year went north of 5%, which means that the government's cost of borrowing is going through the roof. In America, if things don't change within the next 5 years, they're going to end up borrowing from the Federal Reserve just to pay back interest. Now, let's scale that down to an individual. Let's say you or I ended up with such a large amount of debt that we're having to go to the bank just to borrow funds in order to pay back interest. What kind of financial position would I be in? That's now scale that up to what the government's having to deal with. It's why Moody's recently downgraded the United States credit rating from AAA to AA1. So what that means is they just don't expect them to repay their debts, and they're saying that they've got these massive fiscal deficits. Australia's in the same exact boat. So now what people are looking at is there's a $300 trillion credit market, which is that the only way they can support it is by printing more currency in order to keep the rates as low as possible. But that $300 trillion credit market is looking for a home outside of these really bad government bonds. And I believe the best receptacle for all of those, you know, government bond buyers who are now looking at where do I put all of this capital, Bitcoin at $2 trillion only is going to be receiving $300 trillion worth of capital. Now, it's not going to be an overnight switch where people go from buying sovereign government debt into buying Bitcoin. But even if just say 5% or 10% of capital from the credit market was to come into Bitcoin, that would put us well north of $1 million per BTC. And we're witnessing that wealth transfer right now.
Yeah, and that's my big read. When people say, why do you buy Bitcoin? And isn't it too late? Why don't I buy a coin at $2 or like one of these shit coins? It's $2. Bitcoin's $100,000. And I'm like, dude, like forget about the price of an individual unit. That's called unit cost bias, right? You've got to look at the value as what Bish just said of the overall value of the asset is $2 trillion. Is that a lot for all of the Bitcoin on issue or is it a little? Like it depends, right? You have to have a bigger context. And so in the world of global assets, there's $900 trillion of assets and Bitcoin represents $2 trillion. Or another way of putting it, if you put all the world's assets onto a $100 bill, Bitcoin's about 26 or 22 cents, sorry, of the $100. And you've got these big pockets of money that are getting poor performance that need to find a place to exist, whether it's real estate, bonds, what you were just talking about. And you've got this little thing called Bitcoin, which has outperformed everything and is still today worth nothing. Like it's the pound for pound global champion in the ring undefeated in 15 years, except for 3 years. It had outperformed every other asset on the planet, and it's growing faster than everything by a factor of 10 or something. So it's going to grow. And so you see what's happening in Melbourne at the moment. Governments have screwed it up in Melbourne big time. And so they've gone, all right, we're just going to like double land tax and triple land tax and charge fireys. Like land tax in Melbourne's up double in 10 years and all these sorts of things. Four times, yeah. So land taxes through the roof. And then what happens at some point, people start marching on the streets and they go, well, we can't get it off the people, so we're going to print it. And then they end up borrowing, getting credit cards to pay off credit cards. I had Lawrence Lepard on the show, and he said, in history, any country that has hit 130% of GDP, debt to GDP, has had a currency debt crisis. And the US is at 124% and printing like a madman. So, and it's,
TikTok.
and it's, it, it's happened 12 times in history, and never has there not been out of 12 sovereign debt crisis as a result. And so what do you think is going to happen, when Americans all of a sudden, if they go, oh, our US dollar is not worth anything, like Lawrence described it, like being in a theater. At the moment, there's people in the theater and there's smoke coming in through the windows, and people are going, I smell smoke. Is that smoke? And then all of a sudden, somebody's going to yell fire. And when they yell fire, everyone's going to run for the exits. But in the context of Bitcoin, there's only a very limited supply and it's fixed, and they're going to be looking for oxygen, and the only place they're going to get it is Bitcoin. And unlike fiat, they can't print more of it. And there's this 3.5 blocks a minute or whatever it is, and getting less.
100%, man. I appreciate everything you've just said, and the fact that you've distilled such complex topics into really easy bite-sized information for people to actually take advantage of and use is a testament to your knowledge and how much you know this asset class. You know how much you know so much about this industry, because when you talk about sovereign debt crises, the price of the bond yields ripping, you get to probably get a bit disheartened as an everyday mum and dad investor and go, well, what does all of this mean to me? Well, you've just explained it so well. It's just that everybody's going to look for the exits, whether you're looking at getting out of a sinking, hyperinflating currency, or whether you're looking to get out of worthless government bonds because they that the government can't pay it back, or whether you're looking to get out of undervalued or sorry, underperforming equities relative to Bitcoin. There's so many reasons why different asset classes would rotate into Bitcoin. And this is where I'd love to get, your read on it is hyper Bitcoinization. Us Bitcoiners talk about, when Bitcoin hits critical mass. I don't think we're there yet, right? As
Not
in
even close.
not even close. This is why I'm saying we're so early to this trade. I think people you banged on, you were bang on the point when you talked about people have such unit price bias. It's like they look at the unit price of Bitcoin at 166 Aussie or 105,000 US and go, ah, it's already ran. I'm like, man, we're so early to this entire trade. I mean, so much monetary premium is locked up in real estate, where I believe Bitcoin will eat not all of it, but some of the monetary premium of real estate, which could solve a bit of the housing crisis we've got going on here in Australia. So it moves people away from having to speculate on houses to store their value and moves them into a scarce digital asset where people don't need to live under it. One of the funniest things, people go, you can't eat your Bitcoin, mate. Can't live in a Bitcoin. I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point, my guy. We don't want to live in it. We want an actual housing market. So what's the value of a house to house someone? There's value there. There's a price there. I'm not asking for free housing, but it's a lot of the real estate prices in Melbourne and Sydney are inflated in sense of their monetary premium because a lot of them are being used as a store of value, right? Rather than being used as a housing market to keep yourself sheltered from the elements. Whereas with Bitcoin, if Bitcoin goes from 100K to $1 million, it doesn't price anybody out of a house, right? What it does is just means that you get less units for your dollars, but you can still participate and use Bitcoin up to the eighth decimal place. So the unit price going from 100K to $1 million doesn't have severe economic consequences to people down the line. Whereas if a dog box in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne goes from 500K to $1 million, you've just priced out a lot of people. So that's why I get particularly bullish on Bitcoin as a way to fix the money system.
And I want to pull on that thread because you said we've just priced people out. Another way to put it is you've just made people homeless. But like, That's the real world language, right? People who can't literally afford the home. And what you're saying here is just so powerful. And that's been the problem, is that we've, you know, in the DAO of Bitcoin, the book, I don't know if you've read it, the DAO of Bitcoin, it's an amazing book. But there's one line in that book. He says, because of inflation, just quickly before I quote the line, inflation is caused by money printing. That's the bottom line. And it's crystal clear. So if we weren't printing money, we wouldn't have inflation. And inflation is sort of like the greatest lie that's ever been told. But as a result of that, people are finally starting to figure out, especially since COVID, and Australians have been pretty untouched until then, they're now starting to really feel it. Like they're going into Coles and Woolies and they've got half what they used to get, you know, but in the book, for the same money. And people start to figure out, actually, things aren't going up. It's our dollars going down. And in the book, he said, because of inflation, we've turned our houses into hotels, our cars into taxis, and our bodies into porn. And I was like, holy shit, like that is so powerful, because that's exactly what's happened. We have to find ways to monetize everything. And we've been pushed up the risk curve. We can't just have a house now. We have to rent the spare bedroom out, or we have to, you know, we have to do all these things. And this inflation, we're seeing shrinkflation in our life. So, you know, it's the evil nature of this is that, you know, we're not only getting houses that cost a lot more, but we're getting a lot less. So there's smaller blocks, lower build quality. Back in the day, in the 80s, you get a brick and tile, you know, built by some Greek guy, you know, takes pride in his work, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
Some Levo who's there with his mates, yeah, doing a great job for us, right?
Concreting.
Concreters, mate, you know, like they came, they saw, they concreted. You know, they built the country for us, right? But they did a great job of quality homes on big lots of land. Now you get a fibro house, you know, so, you know, like a lower quality house that's made on a smaller block, and there's no cupboard space. And that's why a lot of people like to buy older houses. You're getting far less for far more. And that extends to every aspect of our life. The food we eat, the quality of the food is lower. There's less in the packet and all this. And this is all just inflation. But if you live with Bitcoin, everything gets cheaper. And I people say, houses are going up. I said, no, well, it depends how you're counting, right? Like, if you're saving in Bitcoin, everything's getting cheaper every single day, you know?
It's bang on. I mean, I experienced that myself recently. I was holidaying with the family in Thailand, in Phuket, and the bank that I was dealing with, that, you know, I had a couple of pennies in, they decided to debank me. They said, we don't want you as a customer anymore, and effective immediately. We've cancelled your cards. We've closed your accounts. The cash that you've got in there, we'll mail it to you in a check, and we just don't want you anymore. So I gave them a ring. And I said, guys, I'm on a family holiday. I've only got about $1,000 in the commercial bank account with you guys. Do you mind if you can just leave that so we can have our spending money? They go, no, we don't want you as a customer at all. So you can just collect that when you come back home. Now, as a Bitcoiner, for me, it was like a nothing burger, right? It was a bit of an inconvenience for my missus when we got back home to set up some new bank accounts. But when I was in Thailand, I converted a bit of my Bitcoin for Thai baht. Dude, I converted, get this, 0.03 of a Bitcoin for 90,000 Thai baht, 90,000, yeah. Right? Mm. And I lived like a king, man. The family didn't have any kind of inconvenience. We went to islands. We went on this massive, beautiful, like, catamaran. And the whole thing, they picked us up from the resort, took us back for 4,000 Thai baht, myself, my wife, and two kids. It's like when you're a Bitcoiner, the world just gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And it's like, and pockets of Southeast Asia, like, you require the smallest amounts of Bitcoin in order to, you know, get a fabulous lifestyle. And even now in Australia, I was talking about it with one of my business partners here. I was like, because we used to trade a lot of parcel sizes in 0.1 of a Bitcoin. And it wasn't that long ago that 0.1 of a Bitcoin was $5,000, right? Mm. Australian. Now 0.1 of a Bitcoin is 16,000 Australian dollars. And so it's just like, bro, what is going on? And it's just like, it goes to show you that what will happen is that to fund my family and to give us a really good quality of life, I have to sell less and less Bitcoin for the same amount of Aussie dollars in order to give my family a fantastic quality of life. And I want to put people in that position as well. That's why I'm a Bitcoin broker.
So the question I know that all the Aussies would be asking is, Bish, come on, dude, like, spill the beans. How much was that $5,000 Macca's dodgy deal worth now?
What is it? It was, I picked up about 5 Bitcoin at that time. And what is that now? Like, it was a Macca's visit. They got me about 300, 400, 600, about 700K Macca's visit now. Yeah, pretty good.
I love that story. So your 5K car park dodgy turned into, I got 750,000.
Yeah, yeah. It was so pretty good. It's pretty good.
You're kind of like the inverse. You're the inverse of the pizza dude.
Yeah. But I love it because, look, it's. I think a lot of people feel that that kind of story is only subject for early Bitcoin investors. But I explained to them that in the grand scheme of things, as we've talked about and touched on a number of times in today's chat, is that we're still widely early in terms of the, you know, S-curve of technology adoption. You know, we're still in that early majority phase of Bitcoin adoption. That article that we talked about where the Victorian judge was looking at Bitcoin as money, you mentioned 2 million users of crypto or people who have purchased crypto in the last few years, according to the ATO. To give you an idea, we've got about globally about 7% crypto and Bitcoin adoption across the planet, right? And a lot of underdeveloped nations, like you and I talked about, they rely on stable coins and Bitcoin to survive. So that 7% is quite overinflated coming in from poorer countries. So, but what that gives you a sense of perspective on and a sense of scale on is that that 7% adoption rate is equivalent to the internet adoption rate in the early to mid 90s, right? So that's where we are right now in terms of Bitcoin adoption as a technology and as a monetary asset. So I would say that where Bitcoin will be 25 years from now is where the internet is today, which is ubiquitous, available everywhere. You can get on a on a plane with Wi-Fi. You just sit down at a Macca's or Starbucks. You can get Wi-Fi. It's not a problem. It's just everywhere. You don't even think about it. Whereas 30 years ago, the idea of streaming things from the coffee shop would have been unheard of. And I think that that's where Bitcoin will be within 10, 15, 20 years, is that it'll be everywhere. It'll be ubiquitous. It's like, we'll think back to, how did we even transact with those colored pieces of, you know, plastic? That's where my ambition will be.
It'll be archaic. I mean, Jeff Booth does some amazing content on that around context. And I heard Jeff with Robert Breedlove the other day, and he said, people forget that the internet is a protocol. And you got to understand that the birth of protocols is very, very rare. Technology, very common. Protocols, very rare. So the last big analogous birth of a protocol was the internet. But it took 15 years before they settled on HTTP, right, as the protocol upon which all the layer twos, which is how we experience the internet, a web browser, all the interfaces, everything that plugged in over the top. And up until then, there was these protocol wars of, no, this one's better and that one's better and everything else. And we're now getting to the point with Bitcoin. Also, it took 15 or 16 years for the internet. And then after that, it just went like that. And so what's happened here is that when it comes to money, Bitcoin is at that point now where it's kind of one, okay? It's the base layer. Everything else now is going to be built on top of Bitcoin. And you're seeing that with the embrace of the banks and institutions and governments and nation states and all of that. And he said, this is how early we are. We are just at the birth of the protocol being settled. And we've gone from 1 cent to $100,000. Now the game begins and starts to get interesting. And a lot of people, they're very, very bad at exponential thinking. Peter Diamandis talks about this. And I think that's the analogy. If you take a step and then you double the step every day for a month, you go to the moon and back, sort of thing. Like, you know, like one step and then you take one, the next step's twice as long as the one before, and then the next one, or doubling 1 cent every day for a month turns into $5 million or something. And it's the same thing with Bitcoin and where we are today. It's just so many people's, they just can't get their head around these kinds of
numbers. Our thinking is linear, point A to point B, not correct. A to B. You know, yeah, well, yeah.
Awesome. Who would think you could go to McDonald's and give some dude $5,000 in exchange for a paper address and turn that into $750,000? And how long was that? When was that?
8 years. 8 years.
8 years.
2016. So call it 9 years.
$5,000 to $750,000. And look, that's it. I mean, you meet these people and that's what happens. And I'm with you. I think right now on a risk adjusted basis, like back then that was risky, but now Bitcoin is being bought by, you know, everyone, right? The VP of America has 60% of his net worth in Bitcoin. RFK has 90% of his net worth in Bitcoin. So it's a totally different world that we're living in now. So look, why don't we spend a minute talking about why people should use Stormrake in Australia and around the world? Because a lot of people don't understand this pricing. I won't say who they are, but they're a well-known exchange in Australia. I don't want to badmouth them. But, you know, I'd go in there and I go, hang on a second. Like when I look on CoinStats, the price is X. And then when I go in this big exchange, the price is Y. And there's this gap. That gap is called a spread, guys. Or another way to think about it is you're getting spread. And I'll leave it at that. Bish, maybe without getting too graphic, you can explain how the exchange business works or why you guys exist and why people choose to use Stormrake. And I've actually, I got to open my account with you guys because I've got to buy some more. So give us the pitch, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I won't name names either because I'm a gentleman when I do business. But right now, on a very well-known Australian exchange, you're buying Bitcoin at 169,200 or 169,300, just as I last refresh. Well, currently, with Stormrake, you can buy at 166,700, right? So you're spending well and truly over $2,000 per Bitcoin over the market price. So if the current market price that they're willing to sell it to you, and that's fixed right now, I can look at it right, I can quote it for you guys if you want, 169,300 compared to where we are now, it's about a 2.5% spread, right? So 169,300, give me a moment, I'll give you the accurate pricing because that's how I like to do things here. You're spending about 1.5% over the market price than what you could possibly buy with myself. And that's just not sustainable, guys, because that's 1.5% each way. So that spread isn't just on the buy side, it's on the sell side as well. So you're buying 1.5% over, but if you wish to sell for whatever reason, you're selling 1.5% under the market price. So there's a 3% spread between the buy price and the sell price. So that's huge. Then they tack on the fees on top, which is usually between somewhere between 0.1 to 0.8 to 1% is usually where they, so you could realistically be spending 2.5%, 3%, 4% on Bitcoin purchases if you're going off an exchange. Now, some of you might not deal with the buy now function and you say, well, I'll leave my order on the order book and I'll wait on the make so that the price comes down into it. But depending on how much you want to buy, let's say that exchange has, we're at 167 at the moment, they might only have $10,000 at the next level down and $20,000 at the next level down. So you're having to wait for the price to come down a lot in this environment where we're anticipating quite a savage bull run. You might not get that price fill. And even if it does come into your price, you get something known as a partial fill where you might have $100,000 to take off the exchange, but you only fill half of it. So you don't get what you want. And so that's a really big problem in Australia. You're either not getting the price that you want because you're paying overs if you go at the market price, or you're having to wait for the market price to come down into your bid, which may or may not happen depending on how the market moves. So where we come in is we cut out the spread. We just completely eviscerate it and we say, we're not going to charge you on spread or price markups or premiums or anything of that nature. We charge a flat 2% commission to trade with us. So that way, you know exactly what your cost of business will be when you come to me, whether you're buying $100,000 or $500,000, you know exactly what you're going to be spending. Our minimum transaction is $2,000. So you know, even if you're coming at the minimum, you're going to be spending $40 in fees and you're buying 1960 worth of Bitcoin at the sharpest price possible, which currently is 166,600 as we speak. So we've kind of flipped the model on its head instead of saying, look, guys, we're going to be promoting ourselves as low fees or no fees in some instance, the note, I don't trust no fee exchanges because their spreads are about this wide. But then what I say is, rather than me hiding how I charge you and making it really opaque and it's all baked into the price, which means that you get really a lot less Bitcoin than you could possibly for your Aussie dollars, I'm going to charge you a flat two. You get the most amount of Bitcoin at the sharpest price possible, regardless of the transaction size. So if you're coming in with a couple of $100, then what's available on the order book doesn't really matter for you because you're going to get a good price fill anyway. But if you're buying 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, that matters. Whereas when you come to us, regardless of whether you're buying half a mil or 2K, you're buying at the same price. And that's because we aggregate across a number of exchanges in private markets. So that's essentially the Stormrake pitch in 2 minutes as to why our brokerage serves a very critical function to the market, which is keeping not only the exchanges honest in regards to the prices they charge, but we provide a holistic end-to-end service for our clients. So they make the deposit, but we do the actual sourcing of the trade, finding the best liquidity, hitting the order for them, issuing them the trade confirmation. And that at that stage, they can choose to either withdraw to their own private self-custody wallet or hold with us if they wish to use our multi-sig cold storage vaults. But the choice is available for the client. They're not, they don't have to opt into one or the other. It's just what they prefer.
I love that about you guys, how you're not sort of pushing people to use your custody if they don't want to, because a lot of Bitcoiners want a self-custody, but for a lot of people it's too confronting, too confusing. But if it's not, good luck. So it's kind of like choose the path that suits you best. But I love the fact that you offer both and don't push. And guys, I can tell you now, this adds up. You know, like I've recently moved overseas, as you know, and I had to transfer money out here to set a company up. Had I done it through NAB's exchange rate versus using Wise Payments, for example, I saved thousands and thousands of dollars by using Wise and not NAB. You know, and I've got, and I've been a great client in NAB's, but they will take a shitload of money in the middle. And this is how these guys make money. So if you're buying Bitcoin in Australia, do you guys just do Bitcoin or do you do other stuff?
We do other stuff as well, but we keep the list of less than 40 coins that we currently support. The way I like to describe our business is that although we're not Bitcoin only, we're a Bitcoin first business, which we recommend our clients to primarily focus on and allocate towards BTC. But we do have a number of other tokens available as well.
Yeah. Bish, what would you say to somebody who's a newbie in the space, who's an Aussie, right? Like, what is your advice for new people coming into the space, the most important thing that they should know if they're going to allocate some money to Bitcoin so that they don't lose money? What's your advice there?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. My number one advice is actually use the protocol, right, and test it out, right? Don't have to test it out with your entire Bitcoin stack. When you're getting started, you can probably use a custodian like ourselves to keep the assets safe until you get comfortable. But my number one advice to all of my clients is actually use Bitcoin, right? Don't just, like, you know, you can certainly have a approach where you kind of sit on your Bitcoin, cold storage, vault, keep it safe, keep it secure, keep it offline. But the power, the beauty of Bitcoin is when you really use it. I've been doing a lot of traveling this year, and I travel without a bank card. I travel without a bank account now since I've been kicked off the banks. And as an individual, Stormrake is a business, no problems. And what I do is I came back from Dubai and I transferred my Bitcoin into Emirati dirhams locally for, you know, really good exchange spreads. When I was in Thailand, I told you guys I converted my Bitcoin to Thai baht. I'm off to the United States where you and I will catch up and have a beer. I'll be converting my Bitcoin into US dollars, only little bits of it as well, only what I need to kind of fuel the expenditure. And that's it. So using Bitcoin is really where it becomes really apparent why I'm so bullish on it, because I can talk to you about it until I'm blue in the face. But my number one advice for beginners is learn and use, because knowledge without application doesn't really mean much, right? The reason why you and I get so bullish on Bitcoin, Adam, is that we use it, right? We've seen the power of how it actually enriched ourselves, not just in terms of the portfolio growth. That's one thing that you'll definitely get a lot of benefit from Bitcoin on, which is explosive asset appreciation. But also the fact that it's actually enriched our lives by being able to use it, getting better exchange rates when we're traveling internationally. You know, these are the things that makes me so bullish on it, is that for the client and the end user, if this is the first time you're hearing about Bitcoin, it's not daunting. A lot of people think that it's like this really complicated technology. Using Bitcoin and using hardware wallets and even some basic software wallets to engage with Bitcoin is easier than using a phone app. It's easier than setting up an iPhone when you get it fresh out the box. So it's not hard. I think that's the big thing that I really want to break down, is this misconception that Bitcoin is difficult, which is not. So for the first time listener, guys, BTC, easy peasy, start using it and actually engage with the network, because it's one of the best protocols known to mankind.
Such a, you know, that's awesome. I just want to ask the dumb question, because I know this is going to be on a lot of people's minds. They have this conception in their mind, especially gold bugs say to me, oh, you could try spending Bitcoin, right? Like, I'm like, dude, try rocking into Starbucks with a bar of gold and saying, can I pay with this? Like, it ain't going to work either, right? Like, you say you convert it, when you go to Dubai or you go to Thailand or whatever, what do you actually mean? Like, do you, I'm asking, you know, I know the answer, but I'm asking, right? So do you rock up to like the trading desk at the airport, you know, where you switch your Aussie dollars into your Thai baht and say, here's my Bitcoin wallet? Like, how do you actually convert? Are you converting it to cash, or are you putting it onto a layer two credit card and then using the credit card? Like, what do you do? Because I had a meeting in Nicosia with a Bitcoiner a month ago, and he paid with a credit card. And the coffee shop didn't even know that he was spending Bitcoin, but it was a credit card where he had Bitcoin balance on it. And so he was just paying directly off a MasterCard, and he could spend it anywhere in the world on a accepted MasterCard. How do you do it?
First of all, that's one of the products that we're building behind the scenes here at Stormrake, is the Stormrake MasterCard. So you can just tap and go and see it and use it as you see fit. But in terms of answering the question, myself personally, I just prefer converting it to cash. Now, imagine if you go and you've got Aussie dollars, physical Aussie dollars in your bum bag, your travel bag, and then you go there and say, I'd like to convert 5,000 Aussie dollars into Emirati dirhams. The spread, which is a common word that you'll hear me and Adam talk about, is quite wide between the AUD, Aussie dollars, to the AED, Emirati dirhams. So what I do is I actually just convert it locally. There's a lot of different like Bitcoin desks, similar to how there's a foreign exchange desk. They're not as ubiquitous as you'll find them in every single airport. But if you type in Bitcoin OTC desk or USDT OTC desk anywhere in the planet, in any major city, you'll always find one. And then you just, you know, instruct your Uber driver to go there. You pop out, I send them the Bitcoin, they give me cash, and Bob's your uncle. I'm off to the races, right?
So you're talking about a literal little kiosk where there's a human being sitting there. I'm asking the dumb question because this is brand new to a lot of people. So it's like a kiosk and a dude sitting there, and you, instead of giving them Aussie dollars, you literally are just transferring Bitcoin to them and they're handing you back cash.
Correct. So for example, when I was in Thailand and I was in Phuket, the guy that actually helped me convert my Bitcoin into Thai baht is this Nepalese guy who runs a suit shop. Right. So he actually sells suits outside of the shop, but out on the front of it, it's got like a big Bitcoin orange sign, right? And he also converts Bitcoin inside his shop into cash as well as other cryptocurrencies. And he's just this really hardworking Nepalese dude who's found his way to Phuket. You guys can check him out. He's in Bangla Road. If you ever find yourself in Phuket, go to Bangla Road and go to the suit shop that's ran by the Nepalese guy. He calls himself Cryptocurrency Exchange on Google. It's so funny. And you go there, you walk in, you give him the Bitcoin. He then gives you like a bottle of water. He says, can I get you anything else, sir? Would you like a juice or a coffee or anything? I'm like, no, I'm good. And then he'll serve you up the cash and off you go. Right? It was so easy. And this is like right in the heart of mainland Patong area, which is like the capital.
And he's just made a little bit of a margin doing that for you, and that's it.
He got me a spread. He quoted me a nearly a 4% spread, and I said to him, mate, that price is a bit off. And he goes, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a Bitcoin broker. He goes, how much do you charge? I said, I charge 2%. He goes, okay, I charge you 2% too. And so we had a good laugh about that. And that was
you're the worst nightmare for these guys.
But it was good. We had a good time, right. And it was awesome, right? And I love the fact that it's become so ubiquitous, because to be honest with you, 5 years ago, it wasn't that easy. right? You'd have to kind of convert it in advance and have cash and then take the cash and convert it into the local fiat currency, whether it's Thai baht or Emirati dirhams or whatever. But now it's just everywhere. It's just everywhere. It's so ubiquitous. And even got places in the United States, for example, me and you should probably catch up at Steak and Shake, and we can spend our sats straight into getting some burgers and some thick shakes. So that's becoming how ubiquitous it is. You know, they'll be able to, you know, so you can either convert it, which is what I usually do, or you can spend directly with a business or a restaurant or whatever. You see those little Bitcoin signs where they accept Bitcoin, then you're off to the races and the job's done.
Amazing. Amazing. There's an app I just discovered called the Orange Pill app. I don't know if you're on it, but it's just a place where it's full of merchants, events, partners, and Bitcoiners globally. So wherever you get off a plane, it's like Tinder for Bitcoiners, except not for dating, but just for catching up and meeting people in the area and all the meetups for Bitcoiners around the world. This kind of infrastructure is just so cool to get around, and the people that you meet and the opportunities and the learnings. And I'd encourage people to download that as well. Bish, it's been an absolute joy, mate, to have you on the show. Let's connect in the US next week. And if we do end up at a Steak and Shake, we'll put it on the gram and you can watch us spend some Bitcoin and get some burgers.
It'll be good, mate, because then it just makes it a little bit more reality. And I love the Orange Pill app. I'm glad that you mentioned it, because it really shows you the network effect that Bitcoin has. You know, like, it's so distributed that you can just hop off a plane anywhere on this planet and then you'll just find people who are keen on BTC. Bitcoin. So, I appreciate you as well. And thank you for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure and a blast from start to finish.
Thanks, Bish. We'll talk soon. And guys, if you want to deal with Bish and get some Bitcoin, there's going to be a link in the bio. Going to get your Bitcoin from Bish. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next show. Make sure you subscribe and drop a comment. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.